Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.
Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in. It is the Thursday edition of The Drive. Hope everybody doing well on another nice-looking afternoon. Did it rain here yesterday? Did it rain any yesterday?
It was all around us.
It poured on us on the way to Atlanta
yesterday,
and I was wondering if it rained any here. So
it might have, but not like you got. I saw the radar.
Oh, okay. Yeah, we got a good bit. We're worried about it on the way over to Atlanta, but we got over to the Marist Bank Amphitheater, and everything was fine. It was actually pretty comfortable because I think it had rained there in the area. So
good. Big crowd? Good crowd?
Huge crowd.
Wow.
Huge crowd. Traffic was unbelievable. I mean, it is so many times, but I mean, it took, because of two wrecks on 285, it took us 3 hours and 45 minutes to get from Auburn to Marist Bank.
Wow. You know, that Atlanta traffic in. Whew. But anyway.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you got to be prepared. But, yeah, we made it. Had a good time. I mean, all three acts we saw last night. John Waite was the opener. I was a little surprised. Foreigner was second. And then Styx was the closing act last night. I'm more of a Foreigner fan than I had been a Styx fan. But Styx, very impressive last night. So a fun show as our summer of concerts continued last night. But yeah, welcome in, everybody. It is the Thursday Drive. Dan should be checking in. I know they're packing up and trying to get out. We got okay, good. We'll check in with Dan here momentarily as things are closing down at the Omni in Dallas, the final day of SEC Media Days. Auburn, one of the final teams, along with Kentucky. Those are the final two teams that made the rounds today in Dallas. So we've got Dan, who will be heading back from Dallas while we're on with him. You heard Coach Don Dunn, Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer in here in the studio as well. Ferg, how's it going?
Good, good. Weird not being at Media Days. This is the first one I've missed since 13, I believe. But, you know, it was good, and I'm sure we'll talk about it throughout the show. I really appreciate Hugh Freeze and Auburn for giving those of us who stayed back an opportunity to talk to Freeze today on Zoom. Got a lot of good info out of that.
Yeah, we got about 20 minutes or so.
Yeah, and I know he talked with the media folks, the local people who went out to Dallas as well, and I caught some of that. Got some of that information as well. And then, yeah, the normal rounds at Media Days today. So it's weird not being there, but man, I mean, I got done writing my newsletter for today a couple hours ago, and I looked up and I'd already written like 3,000 words, and it's like all stuff, like it's all good info, and that's what you get in this time of year, you know, from Media Days. Like I always tell people, like the big stage, the thing you see on SEC Network, that's for everybody else, national media, folks who don't cover Auburn.
That's general info, kind of stuff.
You get the real stuff. Like if you're listening to this, you're an Auburn fan, and you're probably a diehard Auburn fan. You get the real stuff, you know, behind the scenes, and I always like putting that out there because, yeah, you get, you know, it's a lot of basic season preview stuff, you know, in front of everybody. Mm-hmm. But, you know, when you have people in there who cover Auburn and talk in Auburn, you can get really in the details with them. We got a lot of good stuff today.
Yeah, we'll talk about that. And if we have an opportunity, we'll let you hear some things as well. Let's bring in Dan Peck, who has been there in Dallas for the entirety of SEC Media Days. Dan, it winding down, I guess, huh?
Hey, yeah, can you guys hear me okay? I'm wandering around SEC Radio Row with a Bluetooth headset on.
Yeah, no, it sounds good.
All right, good. Right now I'm in front of Ty Richardson's table. I'm waving at those guys. I'm doing my own little one man show here, walking around Media Day. So it's good to today was a blast, guys. I know Jacob got to have Jacob got all three of the players on during On the Line. I think he was able to talk to all three of the player representatives in the small room. I was able to get five or six questions up to Keldrick Falk. Got a couple of them up to Peyton Thorne as well. Got a great answer from Peyton about working with the new receivers and Coach Hugh Freeze, who I bumped into last night in the lobby, as a matter of fact, after dinner. But it was cool. It was great to hear from Coach as well.
Yeah, that's I mean that's one of the benefits as Justin was talking about. I mean, of being there, you never know who you never know who you may bump into and get some off the record info at times.
And people might not know this, but Dan is, you know, after being at Media Day several years in a row with Dan is the king of like dominating the electronic media room. Dan becomes a figure at SEC Media Days because he's always got questions, and that's usually a room not as many people are in. They're always looking around. Hey, anybody want to ask questions? Dan's on the ball to the point where I think he's on a first name basis with like half the head coaches in the SEC because of it. So, Dan, it doesn't surprise me at all that you were able to kind of go rapid fire today as well.
Yeah, and when you ask questions to the less in demand players and teams, and there were a couple of beats that really decided to take off a lot of this edition of SEC Media Days. There were very few, I'd say Florida, Mississippi State, even Kentucky today. You know, it was pretty easy to get questions.
That's a long way to Dallas.
Yeah, yeah, it's a long trip. South Carolina, too. I mean, so with that, and when you do that and you say that you're from Auburn as much as I did, they made sure to make, to give me the microphone a couple of times when the Auburn guys were talking as well. So, really appreciative. By the way, I found out that the moderator in the small room, Craig Kelly, was PR director of the Colts for 29 years, and he's in the video of Jim Mora screaming about the playoffs. Like he came with the Colts from Baltimore, and like just retired in like the last decade or so. He's the moderator in the small room, does an amazing job the last couple of years, and it's been always illuminating, and I thought I got some really cool stuff out of the Auburn players today.
What were the highlights to you of what you heard today?
The obvious highlight, and if you listen to the clip you'll understand why, the obvious highlight was Eugene Asante. It's his trademark energy, and he got the catchphrase in a couple of times, explaining why Let's Work is as meaningful as it is to him and to the team, how it's become this rallying cry, and it was just, I think he won over a lot of people in his media appearance. Maybe folks didn't know the Eugene Asante story or didn't know all that much about him before he went in the small room, but he earned some fans for sure.
And he had a great suit on today as well, especially that jacket.
The best dressed. The best dressed athlete of Media Days, I would say, Auburn's Eugene Asante with the blue and white, a tribute to his parents from Ghana, West Africa. The suit, as he mentioned in the small room. So paying a little homage to his homeland a very fashionable look.
Yeah, I was wondering if there were the outfits, because some of the players that I'd seen, it was just like, oh, they look good. But I mean, they're used to really be efforts to.
Peyton had a double-breasted suit on that I know a lot of people took attention to, and then Keldrick Falk, if I remember correctly, went all out with the Auburn color scheme, blue, a lot of blue. It was a blue suit with a lot of orange accent on it. So I think I'm not a Dan. I mean, everybody in here knows I don't dress well, but I thought the people who do dress well, I thought they did pretty well this week, Dan.
Yeah, I dress like a guy who lives in his car, so I can't really talk about. I can't really talk about fashion in any educated way. But
Dan came. Dan dressed up for my wedding, and I was pretty. I wasn't shocked. I was like, wow. I mean, this must be a big event.
Hey guys, I'm getting in an elevator real quick. So if you lose me, that's what's going on.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, I tell you what. We'll. What is your schedule for today, Dan?
I think I can be on Skype for most of the show. I think we're going to try to hit the road here in the next couple of minutes. But When I call back, or if I call back, you should probably have me for the rest of the show.
Yeah, that sounds good. Well, I'll tell you what. Go ahead. We'll let you hop on the elevator and just give us a call back if you get a chance. We've got some audio here. We can talk about what we heard from Hugh Freeze earlier today as well. So hopefully we'll hear from you again soon when you guys hit the road.
All right. Looking forward to it, guys. I'll talk to you soon.
All right. Dan Peck in Dallas. He and Jacob Goins about to start that long trek back.
I'm just glad Dan's getting used to this because he's supposed to do our podcast today the same way. He wanted to do it.
Well, you know it works.
I know it works. And if the headset holds up, Dan's going to do a whole podcast with us from the road. So that first segment was very, very comforting to me to be like, all right, I think we can pull this off tonight.
I think you should be able to do that. All right, we're just getting underway here on the Thursday edition of The Drive. You can join in. You can give us a call on The Drive Hotline, which is sponsored by Skybar, and that number is 334-321-1390. You can text us on The Drive text box, presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, who also sponsor the podcast of The Drive. And the text number is 334-564-1840. Come on in and join us as we continue here with the Thursday Drive.
When bones get out of joint or by
106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive, 16 minutes after 4 o'clock here on this Thursday afternoon. Bill and slated for a little later on.
It's going to be fun. Like tomorrow morning, we're going to have our podcast. We'll talk media days, me and Dan and Painter. It's also our 400th podcast episode, which is pretty cool to think about. Yeah, thanks. We've had a busy week today, and we're going to probably talk about some of this throughout the show. Like I said earlier, had a big newsletter, 3,000 words, just a ton of info from Hugh Freeze from media days. You can check that out. A lot of good stuff in there. For subscribers, I also wrote this week about Auburn basketball schedule and how this thing already looks pretty daunting,
yeah,
it and
does.
It could get even more challenging with what's been rumored right now. We could talk about that if we have time today, but just kind of how important that is moving forward. And then another interesting thing, I love it sometimes when I write something and then a few days later I'm like, okay, I get vindicated by somebody who like is actually in there talking about it. One of the themes I heard from a couple of interviews I heard with Freeze today was he was talking about, like, he was like, man, Jarquez Hunter's not getting talked about that much this offseason. I wrote a story on Monday about how Jarquez Hunter wasn't getting talked about, so you can check that out as well. Really interesting stuff with Jarquez. Not only is he the leading SEC returning running back, leading rusher in the SEC.
Career-wise?
For this year. Like, from last season, the top returning guy. Auburn has not had one of those since Kenny Irons.
Well, he's probably the top career guy then, too.
Yeah, I believe so. Here's another fun fact. If he gets close to 1,000 yards this year, if he's in the neighborhood of 1,000 yards, he could end up leaving Auburn as the number six rusher in program history. And this is a guy who didn't even start until last year. So, it's just – I think people, especially with the slow start he had last year, he really came on in the second half of the season. I think people kind of overlooked the fact that, statistically, Jarquez Hunter has been very, very impressive, and there's a lot of people, even though he's not getting talked about a ton this offseason because I think the passing game's getting too much attention.
If Jarquez and the running game needs to be effective for the passing game to make that step.
And they are, I think this is going to be a big year. And I thought, going off the running game, what Free said today is he looks at that as a real rotation with Alston and Cobb as well, which I think is the way to go about it. Anyway, AuburnObserver.com, you check all that out this week. Ton of stuff there on the site, more coming in the next week or so. And then, we're 2 weeks away from fall camp.
Yeah, August 1st. August that's 1st, one of the things Hugh Freeze said today. Was August 1st is the first day. So, yeah.
Wow. We're getting ready to roll.
Don, how much do you miss that?
I miss it. I really do.
Oh, okay.
I do. Like we were talking earlier in the week, when it got to this point, when they had the media days, you knew it's very close, really close.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, it used to be back not too long ago, it would be media days would end, and that weekend,
you'd see
teams starting practice. Right. But, I mean, it's good to know that, I mean, just a couple of weeks away from the start. Again, we've got all kinds of things. We will tell you what, we'll hold on that for a little bit. Let's talk a little bit, Justin, about some of the things that Hugh Freeze did have to say today. We had that opportunity before he went in with to the big room with the media, then to the electronic room and up and down Radio Row. And yes, he said once again, practice is going to be starting August 1st. I guess one of the first questions was about the roster, and he said it's pretty much set.
Yeah,
I guess
never, he said, say, never say never, but this is about as close to never as you can get. It's really late in the game.
They've been adding players. I mean, they just added
Gotay last week.
Last week.
Yeah. I mean, I think you're pretty good at this point. You know, you've got a few scholarships remaining. You can reward some walk-ons if you want to do that. But I think they're set. And I thought Freeze today talked a lot about the depth of the team. They felt like the roster was better and deeper. It's like, not sure how talent-wise it'll all kind of come together. I think a lot of your talent's young. You never know what that's going to look like in year one. And I think some of the guys they got to kind of fill out the roster, especially on the defensive line, it's like there's not a superstar up front right now. But they do feel like they have depth, and they're going to be able to kind of be able to handle that a little bit better this year.
You know, I looked at the I was updating my depth chart. A lot of seniors,
whole lot of seniors.
Not a lot of juniors. Nope. I mean, it's a lot of seniors and a lot of young guys.
Yeah,
is basically what this roster.
I mean, you got to think about it though. Like, you know, that year, we know the 20. Oh, dude, let me do math in my head. The 21 class is now into just Jarquez. And then the 22 class was the one that was really low rated, and that was Harson's only real full class. And that was not a very deep class to begin with, and a lot of those guys have left as well. So you've had to backfill as much as you can.
Yeah, I think there's only like 8 or 9 juniors on the roster.
Yeah, Jason's comment that there was only 16 guys on the team that were
he was talking about that. Yesterday.
Pre-Freeze. Mm-hmm. I thought that's – but then you look at the guys that did, and I thought Freeze had a good answer about that. Like, you look at the guys that did stay, a lot of them, when you talk about your leadership, you know, your foundation, it's not just, you know
– Well, Eugene's one of those main guys.
Oh, and it's not like – you know, it's not like a situation where it's like, well, these guys didn't go anywhere else because they had nowhere – you know, they didn't have anywhere else to go, or they'll never go anywhere as good as Auburn, so they stuck around. No, like, these are guys who are meaningful football players, and they could have. Like, Jarquez Hunter on the open market could have been like hefty penny in the NIL era. You could definitely say that about some other guys, some of those offensive linemen as well. But, like, I mean, heck, Keontae Scott. I know he was a transfer, but, like, Keontae Scott – where would Auburn be right now, like this offseason? Like,
oh, my goodness.
Keontae?
I mean,
he went into the portal for a little while.
Yeah, your corner situation would really be up in the air. Yeah. I mean, you've got Kayan Lee, who started a few games, but he would be, without Keontae, he would be your most experienced guy.
Yeah, and that's crazy to think about at corner. But, yeah, I mean, I thought that was really interesting. Like, you talk about guys who have kind of who have stuck around and, you know – what Auburn hopes is that this year they're going to get rewarded with a better season, because those guys have never had a winning season. Some of them never, you know, won a bowl game, like stuff like that. Like, you really, really want to have that, you know, let them go out on top, you know, go out with a bang. And I think about that for guys like Jarquez and Eugene Asante and stuff like that, because in this day and age, you could go wherever you want right now. If the price is right. You know, I thought it was really interesting this year that Auburn lost guys in the portal, but they weren't big, like, oh, what are they going to do, you know, without this guy kind of names. And I think that speaks to something when you're coming off 3 straight losing seasons, it's easy to jump off the ship.
Yeah.
But they were able to keep them together, and I think, you know, you need to make that pay off this year. And I think they have a good chance to make that happen.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that at all. I mean,
when you look at your, like, biggest transfers out from this offseason, and you're looking at guys who are like, yeah, you'd probably like to have them around because they're talented dudes, and it'd be interesting to see how they panned out. I think, you know, very different situation than some of these other, but it's like Colton Hood, right? Mm-hmm. You know, Colton Hood, a lot of people were thinking, man, that could be your number 3 corner this year. He's a really talented guy, young, up and coming, really part of that really good DB class. Well, he leaves, and it's like it's guys like that. It's not guys like you look up, like a lot of teams did, where they were like, okay, we were expecting this dude to be our starter.
Right.
We were, yeah, you know, and
a more proven commodity.
Yeah, I mean, because I'm thinking, I'm trying to think of who the big one was, but like
that left this year.
Yeah, through the portal.
Let me look. I don't know. I mean, I really felt Colton Hood was one of the tougher losses that Auburn had. And you're right. He wasn't the guy that was even
maybe Jay Fair.
With all the receivers that Auburn brought in, and we saw the guys this spring, they didn't look like they're surefire starters. Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm looking like you could have used a Donovan Kaufman again. You could have used a Cam Riley again, but it wasn't like what are they going to do without those guys? And that's not a knock on those dudes. It's just I think it's just a sign of like just the roster got kind of constructed in that way.
They have brought in other players that can fill in those gaps more than just filling.
It's not
those
like
gaps.
A year or two ago, like when Kobe Hudson leaves, you're in a rough spot. Bo Nix obviously being the big one of that stretch, but like, I always think about Kobe because Kobe goes to UCF and becomes a really, really good receiver there. In fact, a lot of those guys who went down and followed Gus at UCF, I mean, I think two or three of them went to media days for UCF. Like, they are key players for a UCF team that, I mean, I think the Big 12 this year is wide open.
I think
SP Plus has, like, it's something like I think Kansas State's the favorite to win the Big 12 at, like, 11%. Chance, like there's so many variables in there. It's like basically like everybody in the Big 12 could at least come into this year and say, yeah, maybe
we got a chance.
Yeah, you got a shot. Yep. Which is, I don't know if there's any other conference in the country you could say that about.
Now, did you? And again, I haven't had a chance to hear all of Coach Freeze's comments from there in Dallas, but everywhere that we've heard, and then again today. And I've heard some people that don't follow Auburn on a regular basis comment on, he seems pretty confident.
Yeah.
And he does seem – I mean, he's talked about how comfortable he is with this roster. And, I mean, I think that's one thing that comes out and everybody can see that, yes, this – he feels much better about his situation heading in this year.
And he should. Yeah. I think the staff's much more of – you know, what he's comfortable with. I think the roster's better. I think anybody can kind of see that. I did find it interesting today. You know, Freeze has done a thing, and maybe, you know, in my opinion, sometimes maybe goes a little too far with it just for me just being like, hey, guys, this is a rebuilding. You know, it's going to take some time. I think that's kind of gets overblown at times. But, you know, he was a guy who said last year we should have won more games. You know, this is
– he talked about how much he's improved in year two today.
And he said today it was like all this comfort and all this familiarity, the end goal being to have that improvement this year.
Right.
You know, it's not a wait till down the line. Today it was more – and I don't think he's coming out and saying we're going to, you know, win the SEC. You know, I don't think that's his viewpoint of Auburn this year. But I do think you heard him say more like – we've got to be better. We know we've got to be better, but we think we have the pieces in place to become better. And I think that's a good thing to hear because, like, when you've had three straight losing seasons, I think fans can be patient and they can see the recruiting and the development takes time. But like you can.
Oh, you want to see it on the field. You want to
should have been. You should have been better last year, and you need to be better this year. And to hear him say that. To hear him talk about the need for improvement this season, I think it was a really good move.
Let you know that he realizes, he understands, he knows that.
It's not just because sometimes I think the critics of Freeze in this situation can kind of be like, it feels like sometimes he's just kind of throwing up his hands like, oh, well, when we recruit, when I get all my guys in here, it's going to be that way. I don't think that's his mindset, but like, you know, it's good to hear like a coach come out and say like, hey, you know, we know we've got to be better. And it's not just going to be, oh, wait till Cam Coleman and those guys – or juniors, you know, or seniors or whatever. A, you can't do that because you don't know.
No.
You don't know if they're going to be here.
And part of that is, though, he also wants people to know that we're going to keep bringing in better players.
Yes. And that's what you have to do. It is a build. It is a build. You have to be going in that direction. But you can't just say, hey, wait till next year, or hey, wait till 2 years from now. I think you heard a little bit more urgency in his messaging today, which I think is really good, especially when you're about to go into a season.
I think Dan's back with us. That was quick, Dan. You guys already checked out?
Yeah, Jacob. Jacob and I were able to scramble out of the hotel in just the nick of time to avoid being charged for an extra night. And so we're on the road trying to get out of Dallas at the moment, but making our way slowly but surely back to Auburn.
Yeah, well, Justin was he felt pretty good when there was success with you getting through on Skype in the first segment, since you guys got a podcast coming up a little later.
Yeah, you know, it's going to be a little bit of a mobile recording unit, you know, here in the wings wagon, trying to knock this thing out. But we can do it. Technology provides, and we can get this thing. And it's Auburn Day. You know, it was like you guys said, a lot of news coming out of today, some interesting stuff hearing from not just the head coach, but all three of the players about what it means to be at SEC Media Days and why they're excited for the upcoming year.
I tell you what, we're coming up on our bottom of the hour break. I want to get your thoughts on what the players had to say. So let's get to our bottom of the hour break, and we'll do that and more. Again, we'd love to hear from you, our listeners. Give us a call on the Drive Hotline, 334-321-1390, or you can text us on the Drive text box, 334-564-1840, as we continue with the Thursday Drive.
To be a part of the Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Drive here on this Thursday afternoon, 25 minutes away from 5 o'clock. Bill, Don, Justin here in the studio. Dan is making his way back from the Big D, two Big D's with Dan and Dallas, because they're literally a couple of Big D's. As Dan on the way back after a full week of media days, Dan. Before we get into some of the specifics with the Auburn players today, just give me a couple of highlights for the week for you from media days this year.
You know, that's an interesting question. I mean, I'm thinking about like who really made a good impression or who really, you know, I came away thinking, oh, that guy did. I thought Kalen DeBoer did fine, but it wasn't as though, I think he was just sort of avoiding any misstep and providing professional answers. It wasn't, it wasn't as though there was a ton of sizzle with what Kalen DeBoer was doing there. I really, I got a kick out of Josh Heupel responding. I think I may have said this on a previous show, but someone asked Josh Heupel about one of the games on his schedule, and he said that was the biggest game on the schedule for them that week. which I really got a kick out of us. That's how he said it was going to be the biggest game that week for us. And that's a polite way to dismiss a question, I suppose. But I thought the Auburn players really did well. Keldrick, you can tell the enthusiasm's there. Eugene Asante, it's infectious. You know, his energy and his enthusiasm. And then Peyton Thorne, a very professional. Peyton Thorne, I thought, did very well for himself.
What kind of questions did Peyton have to field?
You know, anything tough? I mean, there's questions about last season. You know what I mean? And questions about how to improve on what happened last year. You know, I think that there's just sort of the questions about what does it take to get better. You know, I don't know if Peyton was necessarily grilled, but, you know, I asked him, and he can play the – I think Drew should have this audio, but I asked him about the benefit of being QB1 for a full off season versus last off season and how that could that could allow him to be more productive this year. I also asked him about how he's gelling with the new receivers, not just the freshmen, but the veterans that Auburn brought in. Robert Lewis, who apparently is nicknamed Unk. Do you guys know about this? Because he's the oldest receiver in the room. So all the guys call Robert Lewis.
That's better than Pops, I guess. You know, or something.
You got Keandre, who's Peyton Thorne knows from his time at Penn State, and then Sam Jackson, who is living with Peyton Thorne, the former high school teammates.
Yeah, they're longtime friends. Yeah,
longtime friends, and Sam Jackson, the new receiver coming in from Cal.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, we'll run some of that here in a little bit. We also. I think Jacob was able to wrangle some of the audio from Coach Freeze at the ambush in Dallas last night that Andy had been talking about. We've got some of that we could run as well. But I was just wondering. I mean, I've read a couple of things from some comments from Peyton, and just wondered, how
I think I think people would really get a kick out of Peyton's answer with the receivers. If Drew has that, asking Peyton Thorne about how it's going with this new crop of receivers, because that's you know, that's something I think people are interested in. You know, one of the ways you get a better Peyton Thorne is with more production out of the wide receiver position. Hugh Freeze mentioned that. My question to Hugh Freeze in the electronic media room was, you know, what are the reasons you're confident in Peyton Thorne this year? And he sort of explained, if you're a quarterback and you're not confident that your receiver is going to win your matchup, can get gun shy, and that can throw off your timing, and that can throw off everything. And that seemed to happen quite a bit last year. And that's not to give Peyton Thorne a pass, but to hear Hugh Freeze explain it, a lot of times maybe it looked like a mistake by the quarterback to us, but that wasn't the guy who made the mistake.
Yeah, well, all right, we have that audio ready, so let's go ahead and we'll run that question from Dan to Peyton Thorne.
Of interest in the freshman receivers coming in, but Auburn has also added several veteran receivers from the portal. Keandre, Robert, your old buddy Sam. How are you gelling with the with your new core of receivers?
No, it's been outstanding so far. It's been a lot of fun. You got a lot of good personalities. We have plenty of laughs. And you got different personalities. You got Rob, who I think they call him Unc. You know, he's the older guy. But I think he might still be younger than me. So I let them take it out on him and not say anything to me. But he's been great. He's kind of, I'd say he's probably the leader of that room. He's got a lot of experience. Like you say, you got Keandre, who's played a lot of games, a lot of big games as well at Penn State. And he's a good guy, too, who likes to work. And so it's easy when you got a bunch of guys that like the work and like to go out and throw. And so many times you get done with that throwing session and you guys just sit there and talk for, you know, 30 minutes when you got nothing else to do, you know, and you're all sitting there on the bench and cleats off and whatnot and maybe in the tubs. And so it's been really good. And then you got a young guy like Cam. You know, I think he might be 17 still. I mean, maybe he just turned 18 or something like that. So he's a youngin', obviously. But he's been great. He's a character. And, you know, it's been good getting to know him and all those guys. So things are going well. And I'd say we're gelling really good right now. And then Sam as well. You know, I live with Sam. So it's pretty easy to get to know him. And I've already known him for 5 years. So that's no problem getting to gel with him.
That's Peyton Thorne as he was – Eugene Asante and Keldrick Falk there with Hugh Freeze today at SEC Media Days. Dan, I guess tomorrow is when we're going to get the results of the press voting.
Yeah, I believe the deadline was right at the start of the show today to get your ballot submitted for SEC votes.
Did you get one in?
I did get one in. I struggled with, you know, a couple of the order of finish things. You know, I ended up, I think I picked Auburn.
It's hard to sort out.
Right in the ballpark of nine, is right about where I think that's right about where I found it.
I can understand. I mean, middle of the pack doesn't seem ridiculous. I mean, I think Auburn can do better. They could obviously do worse.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a bunch of teams, you know, outside. I would say it feels like there's a top four that has. That has settled into the general order here between Alabama, Georgia, Texas, and Ole Miss in some order.
Ole Miss
and
most over Oklahoma. Ole Miss
fourth.
I think
over who?
Oklahoma. Like more people are gonna have Ole Miss over Oklahoma.
Yeah, I would say Oklahoma tends to be. I think Missouri and LSU have a chance of finishing ahead of Oklahoma too. Like I'm not sure.
You're right. Not to cut you off, Dan, but like you're right. Now that you know, you think about it. The other thing, I think Oklahoma is a better team than those teams, but they play the most brutal schedule in the league.
They
probably
do,
outside of Florida.
And they've got to replace an offensive line,
and they got a brand new quarterback. Yeah.
Yeah, I think Jackson Arnold. You know, he was the story Jackson Arnold heard that he's been warned by Carson Beck that Jordan-Hare Stadium is cursed. That's where Jackson's going to play his first SEC road game in week five. I think that's going to be a big test for a rebuilt offensive line and a young quarterback who going into the season fewer than 70 career pass attempts for Jackson Arnold. You know, that's not a tremendous amount of experience for a guy who is the quarterback for Oklahoma going into this year.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting when we see those results tomorrow.
I do believe the highlight, and it's a little bit selfish, but the Eugene Asante let's work thing. I mean, the whole building really gets a kick out of the way. And you know, he unleashes a couple of let's works. Like,
just walking through the hallway. Yeah.
Yeah. So he let it go a couple of times there at the podium.
He did it. He did that as he walked in after the Cal game. And it's the middle of the night. We're all tired. I know he's tired because he had about 80 tackles in that game. And he walks into the media room. I think he was surprised at how many of us were there. He yelled. It was the loudest one he had ever had. And I was like, if he did that then, he's good. A fresh Eugene Asante, it's a volume machine.
It's one of the best stories on the team. I think it's one of the coolest stories in college football, the way Eugene Asante has worked his way into being, you know, a foundational piece of this defense when you think about where he was on the depth chart going into last spring or where he, you know, where he wasn't.
Oh, no kidding. No kidding. I mean, it was like, oh, is he still on the team? Well, you know.
Do you know how close he came to giving up football? He talked about it in the small room that he called North Carolina about GE positions. And he was our GA positions. He was interested in maybe closing the book on his playing career.
Well, because he was hardly on the field at all. His first year at Auburn.
Yeah, to hear him tell it, you know, he was thinking that it was probably the end of his playing career. He was thinking about walking away from the playing aspect of the sport and transitioning into coaching. And it took. It took that spring and Hugh Freeze and his staff believing in Eugene Asante's ability to contribute to turn the corner on his college football career.
Don, I mean, that's the kind of story. I mean, I know you smile when you're hearing when you're hearing something like that. I'm sure you've had guys that maybe other teams or fans had sort of written off, or the players maybe had thought, well, I'm not really going to get a shot, but guys that. You know, just they're continuing just to work, finally paid off.
Yeah, that's a great story, and that's what it's all about. And, you know, you say never give up, keep working, and good things will happen. And he's a great example of he kept working, and he kept grinding, and he had a, you know, new outlook on football and life, and he's a heck of a football player. And I listened to him today. He's very articulate. Mm-hmm. I can see where he's a leader. I don't know him personally, but I would follow him.
Yeah, he's the kind of guy you want. He's the kind of guy you want representing your football program.
Right, he did a great job. Situations, yes.
And in an era of college football where things feel more transactional mm-hmm. than ever before, and more mercenary than ever before, to have a guy work his way from the, and granted, I know he's a transfer himself, but to have a guy work his way from the depths of the Bill Cameron depth chart all the way to being the kind of player he was last year. You don't get stories like that very often. No. And it's really, like you said, I mean, people say never give up and work hard and keep your head down. And to the point where it becomes a cliche, but that's absolutely what happened with Eugene Asante. And I can't imagine being in that locker room and not having a ton of respect for him and the way that he's handled his business.
And Justin, you've got to love the situation if you're on the Auburn coaching staff, having him with the young linebackers that Auburn has, because they've got some really talented young linebackers, and you couldn't ask for a better example than Eugene.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, you have that inside linebacker room. It's like half veterans, and this is their last hurrah transfers.
It's sort of like what I was talking about the depth chart. It's like guys in their last year and mm-hmm. youngsters.
Yeah, and Robert Woodyard's not young at this point, but he hadn't played a ton, obviously, because of injuries and stuff like that. So, I mean, it is a great example when you look at – you know, and I think that's the whole. I think it's a good metaphor for this football team. I think when you look at Auburn, what 2024 should be for Auburn is the vets, the guys that are running out of eligibility, building the bridge so that guys like Eugene Asante and Austin Keys can hand it off to, you know, players like DeMarcus Riddick and DJ Barber and all that, and be like, all right, this is, you know, we're heading in the right direction, and now. You guys go and get Auburn back to where it needs to be. And I think pretty much every position group on the roster, you can see pieces of that somewhere. At least there's some spots where it's a little different. But yeah, I think that's the thing for the year. And it's not the most exhilarating way to look at a team heading into the season. But
when you've had three straight losing seasons, you need to have that bridge. You know, you don't need to have one.
You're talking. I mean, you hear the word over and over and over and over again, and you wonder, is it really something? Culture, indeed, yeah. is, and yeah. that's what they're looking to create and build is that kind of culture at Auburn.
Yeah, and you know, it's got to come from your players. You know, the coaches can set an expectation. You know, the coaches can say they want this and that. The coaches can recruit players to this, but bottom line is that the best teams are player led. And you know, when you have guys like Eugene Asante, and you have guys, I mean, and I think the other thing that's interesting is look at today. You bring Keldrick Falk in. Keldrick Falk is the youngest player to ever go to Media Days for Auburn, but they
yeah,
are not,
he is a true sophomore.
Yeah, but you're not hearing about people talking about Keldrick Falk like, oh, here's this up and coming guy. They're like, today it was a lot of no. That's a leader. Like, you know, that is our guy. I think Connor Lewis, a similar case as well. Mm-hmm. So, you know, obviously in a team that's got a ton of fourth and fifth year seniors that are, you know, wrapping it up in their careers, it's easy to point at a lot of those guys and say, here are your leaders. I think the good thing for Auburn, though, is that they've got guys like Falk and Connor Liu, and I think you have potential down the road with some of these guys.
Well, I mean,
freshmen.
We mentioned Kay and Lee a little while ago.
Kay and Lee's a great example as well. And I think in this freshman class, you know, with their play, but I think also the way they handle things, like Cam Coleman. Cam Coleman, you know, his personality, the way he goes to work. There was a quote today from Keldrick Falk about, like, yeah, this dude was a five-star, but you watched him walk in, and, like, you could tell he was really talented. You could tell he's a five-star because he was just really, really good, but he didn't carry himself like he was, you know, bigger than everybody else. Like, and that's the other thing about Cam Coleman you gotta remember. This dude's the highest-rated offensive recruit Auburn has ever had, right? If there was anybody who could walk in and just think, like, I'm the savior, it would be him. But I think he really endeared himself to a lot of his teams. They knew he was good. They saw he was good quickly. But, like, I also think he's just got a really good personality. He's a hard-working dude. Like, you talk to people who covered him recruiting, and I covered a few of his games in high school. He is a rare elite prospect who doesn't really, you know, handle himself like he's better than the crowd. And that's always good to have. So I think about guys like him and you know, some of that sophomore class where it's like, yeah, they're good. They're talented. They're the type of recruits you need to be better down the road. But I also think they've got some real good leadership in there because, as Freeze was talking about today, you got to find the right guys when you evaluate. You can go star chasing, and obviously getting stars is important. But I think for Auburn is like you got to find guys who fit well, and I think that's they're trying to hit that sweet spot. Dudes who are really, really good, but also dudes that are going to help build you a better culture.
Oh, absolutely. We need to get to our final break of hour number one. Bill, hang on. You'll be up when we come back here on the Thursday Drive.
The 41st Annual World
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive here. Final couple of minutes of hour number one, and let's get to The Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar and Bill. Hey, Bill.
Hey, guys. I heard something mentioned in the last segment about culture, and I'm going to run this by Coach Dunn because he spent a career in coaching, but we had two games. We had a season last year that could have ended very well. And two games spun us sideways. New Mexico State, you should win that game. And Alabama, which you should have won that game too. And that went from, you know, a 6-6 to it could have been 8-4 to 6-6 and spun everything sideways. And that's kind of where we're at. Lack of culture, Coach Dunn. I think the guys last year, they obviously lost to the New Mexico State game. Team that she shouldn't have lost to. And by the way, it wasn't that close if he went to that game. You have to prepare every week like it's the biggest game of the year. I remember Coach Saban lost to Louisiana Monroe.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Probably a lack of culture of assembling players who work hard through the practice week like they're playing the best team in the country. I know that's hard to do because they know who they're playing. And like high school, you know, if you're playing a team that's 1-9, you know that. But you have to. Am I hitting on something that makes sense, Coach?
Yeah, and that's a great point.
Yeah, when we get back.
I'd love Don to expound on that, but we've got to get to our top of the hour break. Bill, if you want to, you can hang on, but we'll get Don to talk about that when we come back, all right?
That's fine. Thanks.
All right. We do need to get to our top of the hour break. Love for you to join in hour number two of The Drive, which is coming up.
Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome in, hour number two of the Thursday Drive. Bill, Coach Don Dunn, Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer, Drew at the controls here in the studio. Dan is on his way back from SEC Media Days in Dallas. He and Jacob Goins have on the line, been out there all week. Things wrapped up about an hour ago. They checked out and already on the road. We probably will hear from him again, but, you know, cell service goes in and out. So we'll catch up with him. If not, sometime during this hour, he should be back in for the show tomorrow. Hour number two of The Drive, brought to you by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care with locations in Auburn and Opelika. On the web at orthoclinic.com. Went by and visited with Dr. Trent Wilson yesterday on a little something. I'm got to get checked with the I don't know if it's the shoulder, the elbow, the wrist, whatever. But great folks there at the Orthopedic Clinic. We'd love for you to join in here on the show. You can give us a call on the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar, 334-321-1390. And we ran out of time in hour number one. Bill was on the line and was talking about culture on a team and was asking Coach Dunn about that. Bill, you still with us?
Still with you.
Hey, Bill, great question, buddy. Yeah, that's hard, especially the first year with a new staff. You try to build, like you said, culture. You try to take each game, you know, is the most important game. We used to call it Team X. You know, this week is our most important game. But as you know, and we all know, kids look ahead, fans look ahead. They know who they're playing, and they're not supposed to lose to some teams that they play. But unfortunately, those teams practice, they work hard, and like, you know, they always say they're on scholarship too. But I think what you got to do is you just got to keep working, and just every day is got to be a hard working day on the practice field. Don't take anything for granted, because it'll catch you and it'll bite you just like it happened to us last year. And the Alabama game, I know we lost, but to me that wasn't the same as the week.
Not even
because we had a chance, and that wouldn't happen again in 100 years. You know, a guy throws at 4th and 31. But you're right; you got to build that culture, and it's through hard work. And you're going to have some disappointments, and I think that happens a lot in your first year, like you mentioned. And Bill said, Coach Saban, probably one of the greatest ever, lost to Louisiana Monroe his first year, so. I think we learned from that. I know we did. I know the coaches did. And I'd like to play them again next year or this year.
Well, you know, well, you're going to get to play that quarterback.
Right.
He's at Vandy now.
I forgot all about
Pavia
that.
Woo. Is now at Vandy. And Justin, another thing that is a big part of this when you're talking about culture is that first year. The first year, there invariably are some players that are there from the prior regime, yeah, that are like, this isn't who they came to play for, or may not have the same vision or ethic or the work ethic that the coaches want. That's what the coaches are talking about, getting everybody. And Coach Freeze has talked about this since he's been here with the culture council that they created with the players.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough because, you know, you've got – we talk about it all the time in recruiting about how a lot of it is about relationships, right? And when you are on a team and they completely change the coaching staff, you can look up and be like, wait, I didn't sign up for any of this. And it's like you're, the familiarity is not there. Mm-hmm. Some guys, you know, I think Jarquez Hunter's talked about this in the past. Like some guys say, hey, I wanted to play for Auburn, not necessarily just a specific coaching staff, so you stay around. But other guys, you know, feel more familiar elsewhere. And so it's a tough thing to do because you've got different personalities, different backgrounds, different, you know, approaches. And, you know, if you're still having culture problems in year 4, 5, 6, that's one thing. Early on, though, I mean, when you're just trying to piece together a roster, it is a tough thing. And so everything's not going to be clicking. Everything's not going to be kind of perfect early on. I think part of the thing when, like, you go back to, like, you know, 2013 Auburn, you know, and they come out of nowhere in year one and they make it all work and you know, win the SEC, you know, go to the national title game. I think what people look at that point is that, you know, they kind of forget that Gus Malzahn had only been gone for a year.
Right.
You know, a lot of those guys were very familiar mm-hmm. with that staff or the people that, you know, wanted to – when you have these big changes – and that's the thing with Auburn, right? You go from Malzahn to Harsin, that's a big change. You go from Harsin to Freeze, that's a big change mm-hmm. too. Now, Malzahn to Freeze might not be as big of a change, but, you know, obviously you had that in between. You're right. Like the culture and then trying to, like, develop – it's tough. It's tough because, you know, not everybody signed up for this. And it's not your fault or anyone else's fault, but, like, yeah, I do think the further you get into it, the more – I think Auburn should be everybody be on the same page. And I think that's part of what Freeze talked about today with the familiarity, the mm-hmm. comfort level in the room. He's like, hey, I'm not trying to call anybody out, you know, or you know, be down on it. He's just, I just feel more positive about what's going on inside the building than I did last year.
And I do too. I hear a lot of detractors about we're not going to do this, we're not going to do that. And I don't pay attention to that because, you know, things can change on a dime as they have many times before. But you know, the culture of preparing for every week, mm-hmm. like I remember Coach Dye came on a show many years ago, well, 6, 7 years ago, and he said somebody talking about Vanderbilt not being a big game, and Coach Dye said, "Well,
lose to them." I remember exactly. He said, "Yeah, yeah, we'll see how big it is when you lose to them."
Yeah, I've been there.
Yeah, lose it. It's not a big game. They're all big games. They're all big games. New Mexico State is a big game. New England Monroe is a big game.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the culture I kind of was getting at, to where I think Coach Freeze will get there if he's not there already. But Coach Saban had to deal with it too, with probably a little bit better roster than we had last year. And I just wish people would be a little more patient, because I believe we got the right guy, and I believe we got the right quarterback, and I believe we're – like I said, two missteps turned our season sideways last year.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah,
Should have won against Alabama, and I give New Mexico State players credit. Those kids came out and played hard. That was their Super Bowl. That was their national championship game, and we didn't. And we got beat. And that turned our season sideways. So hopefully our players, our coaches, everybody's learned from it. And I'm expecting a good season. I'm not expecting to win the conference. It'd be nice if we did. I just want the guys to go out and prepare every week like they're playing the best team in the country. And if you do that, you'll win your share of games.
Exactly. And, you know, the good thing, too, Bill, is we could have really went in the tank. So we – you know, losing to New Mexico State, we could have gotten beat by 60
sure,
against Alabama.
Sure.
So there's some fight, there's some pride, and I'm sure those coaches, well, I know for a fact, being a coach, that wasn't a pleasant place to be for those 7 days or how many days in between.
Yeah.
I expected to get beat bad by Alabama after that game, but mm-hmm. the kids rose from the ground
exactly.
and they played hard.
And that's very
and
positive.
Many times, Coach, that's all you can ask for them.
Right.
Is to play hard you can play.
Well, that,
all right, guys, I appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah, great stuff, Bill. Appreciate the call.
Yeah, and the thing I go back to last season, that Auburn team had a lot of deficiencies, very far from a finished product. There were a lot of problems. But – that's a year where you should have beaten Alabama and you played Georgia better than you had in a decade, you know, or close to it at that point. So, like, that's the thing is, like, you can see where you can see where things could be heading in the right direction. Now it's, you know, it's it, you got to tweak it, and you got, and the other thing this year is, you know, you play Georgia and Alabama on the road. you don't get the magic that you get in Jordan-Hare, which, you know, apparently that was a big talking point. I saw something every day about people talking about Jordan-Hare, and I looked up and I was like, Auburn didn't go till Thursday. Why are there so many people asking about Jordan-Hare at Media Days?
Well, I mean, one of them was not even prompted by an Auburn guy. It was it one of the questions Carson got?
Yeah.
He was just asked the toughest place to play, and it wasn't by an Auburn guy.
He just said
it was Auburn.
And it just became a popular thing. And so for Auburn year, you don't get that with Georgia, and you don't get that with Alabama, but what you do get is an opportunity to build on what you did last season. And I also think that
the first road start for Jackson Arnold.
Yeah, the first five at home. Yep. First five at home is huge. And, I think Auburn fans by week four or week five will be like, all right, well, we're still at home, still at home, still at home. But it helps so much for a team. When you look at a team that needs to get, especially with their passing game, they need to get all these new pieces together. Mm-hmm. They need to get Peyton Thorne rolling.
Yeah, it's not great for the fans. I know fans are going to be tired of, you know, it's like they want a break. It's like, let's be able to do something, not have downtown and everything crowded so much this weekend. But for the team, it's much better.
And nothing guaranteed. Nothing's guaranteed. We saw that last year. But you look, and before you play Oklahoma, you should be favored in your first four games of the year. That's like third of your season that you could say, if we do our job and we play to what we're capable of, we should win. Mm-hmm. And it's like, that could be a huge difference maker, because then that changes the whole calculus of the rest of the year. Now, you're going to have to play a good football game to beat Cal, and I think you're going to have to play a good football game to beat Arkansas. I mean, those guys are, especially Arkansas, those guys are SEC-caliber football players. They are on scholarship. You know, they do all the – but I do think for Auburn, it's like, you have a runway built up. And when week five comes around and Oklahoma comes in, it's like, all right, what do you look like? What does Oklahoma look like? Oklahoma's going to be tested a couple times before that.
They've got Tennessee the week before. I mean, they also got Houston and Tulane.
Yeah. For Auburn, it's like you have this opportunity, you have this runway you can kind of build up. And I think it's just the timing of a year where you have, you know, four straight games where you should be favored at home to start the year. I don't think you could have picked a better time for it, you know, than a year where you say, hey, we got to fix these things. We got to tighten up a lot of that stuff. Well, first week against the FCS team, second week against a Cal team that you should be better than, third week against a New Mexico team that's struggling, and then fourth week against an Arkansas team where last year you beat them as bad as anybody. Mm-hmm. I think it's good time. You just got to take advantage of it, and I think that's. You know, I'm not going to sit here and say I can read those guys' mind, but I do wonder how much of that plays into the confidence or kind of the feeling. Like if you look at Auburn's schedule, it's not like in week two, you know, they're walking into the Lions' Den somewhere. Like they're going to have some time to kind of set themselves up, and I think that makes for a little bit easier. Because last year, week two at Cal, you had no idea what you were going to look like. You know, you felt like you were a better team and you were favored, but like, you were going to the other side of the country, and had not been tested yet. This year, I think you're going to be a lot more, you know, settled in that regard, and it should give you a little bit more confidence as a program.
And let me say one other thing, and it's this doesn't relate to Auburn, but I do think that part of the feeling. I mean, if you heard any of Kalen DeBoer talking about his players and their work ethic, I think. You know, what Nick Saban had installed there at Alabama might make it a little easier. And Auburn fans don't want to hear this. Might make it a little bit easier for Kalen DeBoer, because he's got a lot of players that had that instilled in them year after year after year after year about work, concentration, concentrate on this next game, on the next day getting better. That doesn't mean everything's going to go great for Alabama this year. But that probably will make it a little easier, because you're coming into a stable situation.
Yeah, I agree with you, Bill. It'd be a lot easier for someone to go into that culture, as we say, than, say, a team that hasn't won or had losing seasons.
Right, where you've got to just sort of break it down and start it up from scratch.
Exactly. And you know those seniors and upperclassmen at Alabama know how to work, and they're not going to let these young guys slack off. But, you know, It is going to be different.
Oh, yeah. No yeah. question.
And one real quick thing. I was thinking yesterday watching the SEC Network or whatever, you got the new coach at Alabama, then you got Nick Saban sitting right over there on the podium.
Yeah, that's right.
Pressure?
A little bit, yeah.
Oh, and then the news coming out today that they're going to rename the field at Bama after Saban. It's like, man, they – dude's going to be over your shoulder
He's right there.
He has an office, right? Man. Doesn't he have
an
office?
Yes, he still has an office. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, boy.
All right, we'll get to our first break of hour number two. I believe we have Dan back with us as well on his way back from Dallas. You can join in, 334-321-1390. Come on in here on the Thursday drive here on this Thursday afternoon. I believe we have Dan Peck back with us as he and Jacob Goins making their way heading east as they get out of Dallas.
Yeah, can you guys hear me?
Yeah,
I'm connected again. We are just east of Dallas, Texas now, about 150 miles or so from Shreveport as we continue. Oh, we're about 600 and change from home base. Continuing the trek back from SEC Media Days.
Yeah, so what's the plan? How far are you guys planning on making it today?
You know, I'm going to see how I'm feeling. I'm going to let Jacob do, you know, the first couple hours of the drive, and I'm going to see how I'm feeling. But I, Bill, I really don't want to sleep in a hotel for the fifth straight night if I can avoid
hey.
It. I wouldn't mind. I wouldn't mind getting home. We're not going to risk it or anything like that.
No. Well, Don and
it. We get home by 2 or 3 in the morning. You know, Don knows my schedule.
That's regular time for Dan. I mean, you know, but Don and I were talking about it, and we were talking about it with Ben a little earlier. Yeah. I mean, I'm the same way. If there's a way to get home and I can be in my bed,
I'll take a free place to stay if it's free. Like, you know,
the station is offering a hotel for tonight, and I maintain that if we don't use it and we get home overnight, we should get that money. The money the station is going to spend on the hotel.
That's real incentive to keep driving. Yeah, you're not kidding.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I think you know, even 80% of what the station would have spent on a hotel. You know, it's as tempted as I am to pull off in Biloxi and waste all the money I made this week. It would, you know, I
was about to say, just stop in Biloxi.
Shreveport.
We could stop in Biloxi or something, but or one of the you know, a couple of these Mississippi casinos and the gas stations.
Oh yeah.
We could pull into one of those.
I'm sure those
slot machines are progressive and they're paying off very, very, very soon.
Sure.
Yeah, that's right. But, I did notice that the Mega Millions last night when we were on the way back from Atlanta is a little over 250 mil. So
Bill, RIP to the Mirage too. Yesterday, the last day of my my favorite resort out in Vegas. And
why were you a Mirage guy?
I was a Mirage guy when I would go out there for, I don't know, maybe it was the Siegfried and Roy Tigers or the aquarium.
That is kind of cool.
Or the vague pina colada scent that they would spray through the place. But
Was that what that was?
I liked the Mirage. I'm going to miss that place.
Oh, man. Hey, Dan, you were talking about comments from Eugene Asante. We've got those ready. You want to set up what we've got?
Yeah, so this is a pair of questions for Eugene Asante about working his way into the, pardon the pun there, working his way into the starting lineup, and then the way Let's Work has taken hold of the Auburn fan base as a rallying cry for this team.
Dan Peck, ESPN 106.7 in Auburn. You mentioned your story. You were near the bottom of the depth chart about a year and a half ago. You've worked your way into being one of the team's leaders. What's that like? What was the process like of working your way into the starting lineup and becoming the player you were last year?
Yeah, it was just a process where I wanted to prove to my coaches that they can trust me to be out there on the field, and that really started with my day-to-day process and how I carried myself and within my life. The coaches have to trust you if you're going to make the right decisions off the field in order to trust you on the field. So I wanted to be a person that is a reliable person in terms of preparation, in terms of everything I do into my day-to-day life. And then that football piece came in terms of understanding what I had to do on the field and going full force on the field, being somebody that was relentless in terms of his effort and the way he played the game. And I'm so grateful to Coach Freeze and the staff for giving me that opportunity when they did. And I'm going to continue to try to make them proud in all my endeavors.
What can you say about Let's Work and the way that that's sort of taken hold as a rallying cry, you know, not just with you and your teammates, but
Let's around, Work!
But around the whole program.
I'm sorry, I had to get that in. Yeah. To be honest, I think it really has allowed the guys, the guys have rallied around that saying. You know, that's kind of how I've been my whole life, energetic, outgoing, souped up, you know, energy type guy. So I just implemented that and I brought that to the team last year. And, you know, I'm just going to continue to try to embody it. You know, I always say being an undersized linebacker, people try to put stipulations on you or try to put narratives on you. But, you know, I feel like the Let's Work saying is the big, is like, just embodies everything I believe in, you know, just relentless effort. Yeah, if you believe I'm undersized, that's fine, but I'm going to show you with the way I work, the way I play the game of football, and the way my passion and the love I have for this sport.
Eugene, great job. Thank you.
Let's Work!
Again.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Great stuff, and but no surprise if you've been around Eugene. So yeah, he'll wake up if somebody was not paying attention.
It felt like when we were at Cal, it felt like it was 4 o'clock in the morning, and he was still like that.
Our old buddy AP Stidham from the AP Stidham and Kelly As I See It syndicated radio network. I think he had his head down in the front row when Eugene hit him with the Let's Work, and
that's great.
I woke him up.
Yeah, man.
That's some great stuff. All right, 26 minutes after 5 o'clock here on the Thursday edition of The Drive.
Can I ask Dan something?
Sure.
Dan, I armed you with tools in Dallas to eat. How did you do?
I did all right. Of course, I took Jacob to In-N-Out Burger.
There you go.
For the first time, he'd never been to In-N-Out. They have one here in Dallas. They actually took pretty good care of us at some of the media events.
They do a good job of that. Yeah, the SEC definitely does.
The event at Globe Life last night was which is a gorgeous ballpark. By the way, we were a day late for the All-Star game, but we were able to.
Still looks like a grill from the outside to me, but yeah, apparently it's really nice on the inside.
Yeah, it's got sort of that Bucky's Walmart sort of I get what you're saying there.
But everything around there is like that. Like AT&T Stadium's like that, and famously AT&T Stadium is across the street from a Walmart if you've never been there.
It's a unique neighborhood there where it's like the stadium district.
Yes.
In Arlington, where you've got AT&T, you've got the old Ranger Stadium, which has been repurposed for high school football, and the local USFL team or whatever. That can't be the USFL, whatever the league is.
UFL now.
Yeah, the UFL team plays there in Arlington. The AT&T Stadium's there. The WNBA arena is there for Dallas, which saw Caitlin Clark last night.
Man, Dallas went nuts this week.
Yeah, no kidding.
Single game assist record last night. Caitlin Clark pulled that off in Dallas. So yeah, there's a lot going on in the area. But the food wise, I got some quality Tex-Mex in me.
There you go.
One of the nights meeting up with some friends, a couple margaritas as well. So I did all right.
Did you get a barbecue?
You know what? I did not get barbecue. I mean, they had some barbecue.
Are you still in Texas right now? You need to rectify this.
I might grab a pulled pork sandwich at a Bucky's on the way out just to say I did it.
There you go.
All right. Dan on his way back from Dallas. Bill, Don, Justin here in the studio. We're approaching the bottom of the hour. Love for you to join in. Anything on your mind? We'll talk more about Auburn at Media Days. Want to talk a little about Auburn's basketball schedule with Justin as well. But we'd love for you to join in. 334-321-1390. Come on in as we continue with the Thursday Drive.
With Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive here on this Thursday afternoon. Dan is on his way back from Dallas. We'll see if they make it back in time for him to be here with us tomorrow. Bill and Coach Don Dunn going to be here tomorrow. We're planning on that. Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer with us here on this Thursday, as he usually is. And Ferg, let's you mentioned if we had time, mm-hmm. wanted to talk a little bit about Auburn basketball. Okay, it's fine. It's official. We'd been hearing that that Auburn and Purdue were going to get together, and they are indeed in December. This non-conference schedule for Auburn basketball, I mean, challenging is a huge understatement. I mean, this is quite the undertaking, and it tells you an awful lot of what Bruce Pearl thinks of this team.
Oh yeah, a few weeks ago when we were in Hoover, asked about kind of the non-conference schedule, and he said, "Look, it tells the guys that I believe in them. It's that I trust them. They think this is going to be one of the better teams in the country." I wrote about it earlier this week at the Observer. It was really interesting, I thought. If you look last season at the NCAA tournament, you look at all the high major teams in the NCAA tournament, the top eight teams in non-conference strength of schedule that made the NCAA tournament, all eight of them made the Sweet 16.
That's pretty impressive.
It is pretty impressive. And when you look at scheduling a difficult non-conference schedule, how much it helps you, Auburn was several wins better than Alabama in the regular season, had better analytics than Alabama, especially on defense. It helped them out. Bama was just one spot on the seed line but behind Auburn on Selection Sunday, and part of it is because Alabama had a crazy
non-conference schedule.
The teams that were ahead of Auburn in the seed lines but were not as good as Auburn in the analytics, like every one of them, I think the only exception might have been Kentucky, but Auburn obviously had a head-to-head loss to Kentucky. Every one of them had a tougher non-conference schedule than Auburn. Now, for Auburn, you can't always sometimes it's out of your control. USC should have been a better basketball team than they were last
year.
Obviously not. They got Virginia Tech. Virginia Tech didn't really work out like they thought they might have in the ACC Challenge. They're taking all that out of the equation this year.
You
get Duke on the road.
Yep.
You get one of the most loaded Maui fields ever. And now you know that you're going to be playing Purdue in Birmingham. There's a couple other games in the works. Rumored that if they come to fruition for Auburn, I pointed it out in the story this week. There is a real chance, depending on what happens in Maui, that Auburn could play in the T-rank projected teams right now in college basketball. Number 1, 2, 3, and 6. Auburn could play all those teams next season if things go the way they could go in non-conference coaching. So, like I said, Duke, Purdue, the Maui field. There's at least one more game I know of that could be pretty big, and then another one that would be that could end up being quite one, quite
yeah,
two.
Yeah, I was going to say there are a couple of other big names that very well could pop up on this. So I mean, what an exciting schedule it is, though.
They're reportedly going to play a Big 12 team in Houston, the first week of the season, which is good for Auburn because the first Saturday of college basketball season is also Auburn's off week in football, their second off week in football. So that would work out really well for a lot of fans, I know. They're scheduled to play a Big 12 team in Houston. The word is it's probably going to be Houston.
Right.
Which would be, Houston right now.
Houston's preseason top five.
I think they could be preseason number one. I really do. The amount of talent they're bringing back on that team, they're bringing back 70% of their minutes on a team that was probably the number two team in the country wire to wire last year behind UConn. And then the other one is
if the point guard. If I can jump in here, can you guys hear me?
Yeah.
Am I muted? Oh, hey. If the point guard was back, I think Houston would unquestionably be the number one team in the preseason.
They got LJ Crier back. They've got three of their top five players from last year back, which is like we're talking about how Auburn has that this year and how crazy it is. Houston was an even better team last year. The other one that's been rumored. Auburn reportedly is going to play in the Holiday Hoopsgiving once again against a Big Ten opponent. That has not been announced. The Big Ten opponent that's supposed to be in the Holiday Hoopsgiving this year is reportedly Ohio State. So that's probably what's going to line up there. Be interesting if Auburn plays Ohio State again. It will be interesting what Ohio State does. They're preseason top 30, top 40 team right now. Michi Johnson's at Ohio State now. That'd be an interesting to run back into him again. Ohio State's interesting. Remember, they had
you know, they fired Chris Holtman last season in the middle of the year and then ended up keeping their interim after they had such a strong finish to the season. So Ohio State, a very interesting case. But, I mean, you look at that, you look at the Maui field, you know, there's a real possibility Auburn could end up walking out of non-conference play playing 6, 7, 8 top 50, top 40 teams in college basketball this year.
Golly, they could play 6, 7, 8 top 30 teams.
Uh-huh. Yeah, exactly. So, you know, Iowa State's one of the teams that is in the Maui field this year. I don't think people are talking about how good Iowa State's going to be. Number one defense in college basketball last year, they returned most of their lineup back. Like, this is going to be a crazy field. Like, the easiest, quote-unquote, teams you could run into in Maui are Colorado and Dayton. Dayton always has a pretty solid team. Colorado might not always have it together, but they made the NCAA tournament last year, and they are like one of the sneaky, like, they remind me of A&M to an extent. They're like a sneaky, you look up and you're like, oh, that NBA player went to Colorado, and you just kind of forgot about it. Like, A&M's got that quality about them. And then, like, the rest of that field, Carolina, Iowa State, UConn. Like, it is unreal what Auburn could run into in Maui. And so it's one of those things where it's like, Auburn fans, I don't want to set you up for disappointment here, but the thing with this schedule, as we saw with Alabama last year, as we've seen with some other teams that have scheduled this well, part of the reason to schedule them that well is that you don't get dinged for that a lot come Selection Sunday. You know, Alabama lost 3 straight games pretty solidly to some really, really good basketball teams in the middle of the year last year. And, you know, they took their lumps throughout the year, but come Selection Sunday, they're still a 4 seed because the committee's like, man, look at who they played. Look at who they barely lost to or lost to. Look at who they beat. Auburn didn't get a benefit of the doubt last year because the schedule didn't really fall the way they wanted to. I mean, there were 2 or 3 games that Auburn won last season that could have been quad one if teams were a little bit better.
Right.
You don't get that benefit of the doubt, though, when your non-conference schedule isn't as strong. This year, they're going to put that all out of reach. I think it's going to be not only I think it's going to be the toughest non-conference schedule Auburn's ever had, I think it's going to have the potential to be one of the toughest non-conference schedules in the country this year, period. I mean, I think the only ones that are going to be tougher on paper are probably those, you know, like HBCUs and like really small conference teams that go play everybody for money. Like, this is going to be crazy. And the good news, I also think, for Auburn is that this seems like it could end up being a pattern. We don't know what next year's roster is going to look like, but we do know they're going to play Purdue in Indianapolis. And one of the constants you can have in college basketball is know that Purdue's going to be pretty good.
Yep. Well, that's a nice selling point, too, as you recruit for next year.
Yeah, and then you have your ACC-SEC challenge. If Auburn does well enough this season and they do well enough in this game against Duke, ESPN's going to keep giving them really good games. So, like, next season, you could see Auburn, like, host a North Carolina or, you know, host a Virginia or somebody like that. Or, like, you know, somebody like – no disrespect to Virginia Tech, but, like, Auburn had that run, and then the Big 12 challenge they had as well. They were getting those mid-tier teams. They weren't getting the best of the best. Obviously, the ESPN set them up with one of the very best. I mean, that Duke team, they're not going to be the best team in the country at the beginning of the year, but, boy, they could be it at some point in the year with the amount of talent they've got. So it's going to be a lot of fun.
Talking about the talent Auburn returns and everything, a while ago when we were talking about culture with football, I think that is huge for Auburn basketball because of the guys that Bruce is bringing in this year. They're coming in to a very experienced, established group that knows what's expected of them and what it takes.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, this team, and we heard about it a lot, when you talk about culture and chemistry, and it's important in football, it obviously is. Basketball, like, you know, it's a different level too, because it's like everybody's playing offense, everybody's playing defense. It is a game where you have to, like, you know, everybody's got to do some of everything. So, you know, you have that chemistry being really important. We heard so much last year. I wrote about it when Auburn won the SEC tournament. We heard so much this past season about how the summer was critical for building that team, because on paper, that, you know, analytically, by the end of the year, Auburn was top 5 team in pretty much every analytics kind of site.
Yeah, but you didn't have any idea how those guys that were coming in last year were going to be
exactly
going to play defense. Who,
but, like, that's the thing, is, like, this was a top 5 team in college basketball last year. It tied for the best KenPom finish Auburn's ever had, but with the 99 team, not a first round pick on that team. Like, as good as Jani Broome is, not going to be a first round pick. You know, maybe not. In the, like, not even, not close to a lottery pick. You know, they on paper were better than the team 2 years ago that had Jabari and Walker on it. And it's like, what you're able to do, especially I think in this day and age college basketball, is just that chemistry, what you're able to build, the experience factor, or having a good system. We can see it. I mean, you know, UConn had a couple of really, really good lottery, you know, pick type of talents these last couple seasons. But, like, UConn won back-to-back national championships. I don't think anybody looked at that roster on paper and was like, whoa,
wow,
that,
yeah.
You know, they're it's beyond
not
loaded.
Like looking at Duke's roster.
No, it's not. You know, it's exactly. It's not like looking at Duke's roster. Not looking at, like, most Kentucky rosters or stuff like that. And so chemistry and that work matters a lot. The summer was so huge for this team this past year. And I think you're seeing that again this year, especially with the guys they were able to bring in. Early word from practices and stuff like that. They really like what they've gotten together. And I don't know if every Auburn fan's not on social media or anything, but there's a video of Miles Kelly in practice here recently. Go watch that. It is pretty incredible to see what he can do when he gets hot as a shooter. And you're adding him to what we already know. Denver Jones and Chad Baker-Mazzara and those guys are, you know, when they get hot. And obviously, J.B. McGee has that ability as well.
He's a guy that now this year doesn't have to be. I mean, he's not going to be the target, the one guy that you've got to stop. Because Bruce would welcome that for teams to go, okay, we're going to do everything we can. You can't do that with the other players.
I compare – it's not a like-to-like comparison, obviously, because of different factors, but – I think about Miles Kelly very similar to how I thought about Rivaldo Fairweather coming in for football. When you're the guy on a bad football team or a bad team, and every week the other team knows they got to go get you, and you can still produce, right? You know, Rivaldo Fairweather put up good numbers at FIU with, like, a rough quarterback situation on a bad team. Georgia Tech, the most insane team in college basketball last year. If you don't know, Georgia Tech finished with a losing record, but they had like 6 quad one wins. It was insane what they were able to do. Everybody knew when you played Georgia Tech last year, you got to slow down Miles Kelly.
Yep, he was the guy.
And then he would go into Cameron and drop 25. And it, like, you know, that's the thing to me, is like, that's what you get. That's when you know you have somebody that when you put more talent around them, you know, you could see, like, there's really good potential in there. We saw that some with some of these other guys that Auburn's been able to pick up from the transfer portal. But, like, Kelly's that one to me. Because not only is he, oh, I'm not going to have to carry the load on a bad team anymore, he's also played some of the best teams you can play because, you know, played a really tough schedule with Georgia Tech.
Great stuff on basketball as we get a little bit away from Media Days, which have wrapped up in Dallas. Tomorrow we will have the results of the media's voting for all conference and order of finish. We'll talk a little more football. I want to get Justin's thoughts, and we'd love for you to join in as well, our listeners, as to what Hugh Freeze was talking about today about play calling, because it's interesting. It's not the simplest thing I've ever heard. Stick with us. We're back for our final segment here on the Thursday Drive.
Folks, buying a home or property can be the biggest investment of your life. Making sure you have a clear...
Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive. Final segment here on this Thursday afternoon. All right, Dan, is Dan still with us? Yeah.
Guys, can you hear me?
Yeah, we got you. All right, Dan, we had a little bit of time with Hugh Freeze earlier today, and I know he said this at a couple of places, but just trying to figure out the play calling is one thing Auburn fans have been wanting to know exactly how the play calling is going to go. Remember, Derek Nix told us he's going to be calling the plays. Well, Hugh was asked about that today, and Justin, I'm still a little confused. Derek Nix has the early downs, right?
Yeah.
And Kent Austin's got
third and long. Obvious passing.
And then Hugh Freeze can just pop in anytime.
Hugh Freeze has reign to come in and call his shots. He's talking about benchmarks. For those people who don't know, like, what benchmarks are, it's like certain situations, certain stuff in the game plan that you prep for. You know, hey, if we get him such and such situation here, we're going to call this player. We're going to hit this shot. We're going to do that.
I remember last year, you know, he talked about he prides himself on red zone.
Yes.
You know.
Yeah, yeah, and that's the thing. He was talking about, like, with game plans, is like, it's a collaborative effort. Like, one guy can't make, like, you know, Coach Dunn, obviously, like, one guy can't put together a whole game plan. It is, no. you gotta have everybody involved. The day-to-day, the in-game stuff of, like, who calls what plays, like, if they're all comfortable with it and they all agree to it, maybe it'll work. But it's one of those things, like, that is a very unique setup. Because a lot of times when you think of college head coaches calling plays, they're the guy.
Yeah.
It's the Lincoln Riley, the Lane Kiffin, the, you know, Gus throughout stages of his career, like, you know, being the be-all, end-all. I'm all for, and I think it makes sense, to be collaborative and you know, pull different – especially when you're a head coach and you have a lot on your plate. It'll be interesting to see how this works out, and it goes back to what I said earlier. Might be good that you have a few games where you're probably going to be favored to start the year, because I feel like you might have to work out some kinks.
Yeah, Dan, did you guys get any of that there? I mean, was there more talk of that play calling?
I didn't get anything illuminating on the play calling. You know, I think Hugh Freeze did answer a question about it in the small room and sort of gave a similar explanation as to what you guys are talking about, where there's a, you know, it's a combination of Derek Nix and Kent Austin and Hugh Freeze himself, you know, putting input into what Auburn's going to do. It sounds like Kent Austin is like a punter, right, where you don't want to use him. If he's just going to be the third and long guy.
Yeah, you hope you don't get the third. Now, he did say that. He goes, he's third and long, but we hope we're not in that situation.
You hope he can just read a magazine or something all game long and not have to get called into action. But it sounds like Hugh has a lot of trust in Derek Nix to run, you know, a more pure version of what Hugh Freeze wants offensively. I imagine last year it was more of a marriage of Hugh Freeze's philosophies with what Philip Montgomery.
He wants more RPO. Yeah,
and you got to also remember, Derek Nix is not all, you know, he's running backs coach. He's also been a wide receivers coach as well. So mm-hmm. I mean, if there is a guy that you feel like you could, like, synthesize what you want to do both through the air and on the ground, it'd probably be him.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. And we, you know, I think Derek Nix hasn't. This would be his first time as the primary play caller in his college football career, right? I think that's right.
Yes, that is right.
But he seems eminently qualified to do it based on his, you know, based on the last 10, 15 years of his career.
Yeah, and the way I see it kind of working out is, like, you got your offensive coordinator, you know, calling the plays, calling the shots, and then your head coach can come in and, like, hey, we're in this spot. Let's call it. Let's run this. We talked about running this. Let's do this. You know, and him having kind of the last word. That seems to be what this setup kind of looks like. And he talked about how Ken Austin's been his third and long guy in the past, like drawing up, like, you know, obvious passing situations, what you need to do there. I can see it working out. I can see it working out, but it's going to take a lot of cooperation. It's going to take a lot of trust in one another. It's going to take some patience as well, I think. And I think that goes back to what Freeze said today. I'm familiar with these guys. You know, Ken Austin's been with him for a long time. Derek Nix was with him for a good chunk of time as well. It's that familiarity and that comfort. And I don't want to think he wants to badmouth Philip Montgomery or anything like that. It's just, like, it didn't work. It just... Yeah. You know,
well, it's two guys that had never worked together before, and, you know, you hope things go well. This is something where it has worked before, so
maybe it'll work again.
Yeah, hopefully. Dan, we're down to the final couple of minutes or so. You guys take care on the way back, and hopefully no bad weather or anything slows you down.
Yeah, looking forward to a smooth ride home. I'm going to try to come into work tomorrow. I'm going to try to, if I'm feeling it, I'm going to pop in at 4:00. Justin, I'll talk to you in just a couple of minutes.
Yes, sir.
Be safe, buddy.
All right. Appreciate it, guys. Thanks for everything this week.
Yep. Take care on the drive back, Justin. While we've got a minute or two, just talk about what's coming up there on the.
Yeah, so this weekend, tomorrow we're going to have a podcast. Dan and I and Painter are going to do a podcast. We're going to talk all things media days, what we learned. Like I said earlier in the show, I got over 3,000 words of just intel, stuff we got from Hugh Freeze away from the main podium today at Media Days. You can check that out. You can also check out the basketball story we discussed, Jarquez Hunter's story, and then we'll have some stuff, you know, over the next couple of weeks, football and basketball. And it's fun to think about how 2 weeks from today we'll be talking about actual practice.
Yeah,
that's a lot of fun.
It is great.
Looking forward to it. It's been a long summer.
And Don, yeah, thanks again for coming in. And do be here tomorrow.
Because, I will be here.
We'll see if Dan makes it.
The good Lord willing, I'll be here.
Well, that sounds good. I'm planning on it as well. Yeah, we'll.
Drew, you gonna be here? I'll be here. All right, everybody's. Drew, yeah. I won't be here, but everybody else.
We'll have the recap of Media Days, the projected order of finish, and preseason all conference, and much more. But we're out of time here on the Thursday edition of The Drive. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Have a good one, everybody. We are out of here.